Spiro said, you know, you should try out for The Apprentice, and he sent me all the nomination stuff, and I said, mate, I don't have time for this rubbish. I actually said to him, I said, I was busy being $1 million a year writer in real estate, and I thought I was just going to be, you know, that simple boy from Moody Pond for the rest of my life.
Some people are simply born lucky. Some are born with money to their name. And some are born into greatness. But very few are born with the instinctual knack to make quick, life-changing decisions that always prove to be the best outcome. And even fewer of those can be this successful without any formal training or financial boost. Today's guest is a very rare one indeed.
Welcome to Property Invest Story, the podcast that goes behind the scenes of property investing stories. Here's your host, Tyrone Shum.
Hi, I'm Andrew Morello, winner of the first Australian Apprentice, head of business development at Yellow Brick Road, and serial property entrepreneur. I love what I do because it gives me the freedom to experience life and give back to the world around me.
Today's guest is an impressive testament to the rewards of hard work. At 18, Andrew Morello has already saved up an imposing $50,000 for his first property deposit. Now, at 30 years old, Andrew Morello has continued to climb and currently possesses 9 properties in his portfolio. So, to begin in 60 seconds or less, what do you actually do in any given day?
Well, in any given day, my life can literally look quite strange or quite odd. To give you an example, last week, on Tuesday and on Friday, I was in 3 states in one day. So to give you an idea, sometimes I'm getting up at sort of 4:30, heading to the airport, getting on a 5:30 boarding flight. I'm taking the 6 o'clock out of, let's say, for example, Melbourne, flew into Brisbane, picked up a car, did some Yellow Brick Road appointments in Brisbane, did some property due diligence stuff, might have seen someone for 1 or 2 of our investors for one of our different businesses, then jumped in a car and drove down to the Gold Coast, and then jumped on a plane, did some business, and jumped on a plane Gold Coast to Sydney all in one day and finished. Got home at 11:30 at night.
Morello attributes his father's work ethic of save and be safe as the reason behind his appetite for risk-taking as an investor. Morello is a strong advocate of the work smart, not hard mantra.
Well, with regard to my property investing, I was very privileged and honored to grow up in a family around property. When I say that, no one has given me any help with buying any of the properties or given me any of the, made it easier in any way. But what happened was I saw my father, you know, obviously built the old fashioned way, work hard, probably not as smart as he could have, but more just work hard and obviously buy, save, buy property, save, buy property, live on the smell of an oily rag. And what it probably did is subconsciously it gave me, the right credentials to be able to be, to have an appetite for risk. But when I say risk, the property stuff that I've been involved with is reasonably conservative. Others would say that I'm probably more bullish, but I would argue that, my family's been in Moonee Pond since 1956, Kensington, Bondi. You look at all the places where I own property, like, they really, good times or bad times, 91 recession, you know, the Paul Keating recession we needed to have, or the GFC. These areas didn't really go down. They might have plateaued slightly, but over a 50-year period, they've all got a great proven track record. So I think it's the balance between conservatism and proven track record. Do I think that I can be aggressive at times or a bit bullish? Yes, I can. But it's probably due to my risk profile being 30 still and not married with no kids. So it gives me the opportunity to be that.
It was never easy for Morello's parents, who arrived as Italian migrants in Australia in the 1950s.
Back then, all Italians picked fruit and veggies. A lot of them did work on farms and things of that nature. But then my father basically left school at 13, 14 and became a mechanic. And he has been since. It's not like it used to be where you would do, 3 or 4. Like now it's like you do... I think they reckon the average person's going to have like 13 different careers between now and when they're born and when they die. But Tyrone, my dad's been a mechanic for literally 50 plus years now. and he's been in the same service station for 45. And my mother was, I came from a stock of hard workers. So my grandfather, when they came out, the grandparents, they, you used to have to sort of do deal with the devil sort of thing, because what happened was you would, the man would get sponsored by, say, like a wealthy Italian guy, and then you would have to come and during the day you would work to save to bring your family out, and then at night you would have to go and work a second job to pay the guy who sponsored you to come out, and then obviously you're going to pay him more money, and then he would sponsor your family and so forth. So it was when you listen to the stories, and it's definitely not what it's like to migrate to Australia. So I know it's still quite difficult to get to Australia. At least they invited us in back then, and Sir Robert Menzies, in the 50s had this love affair with Italians and Greeks and thought that they could rebuild or they could build anything. And he was right. They came here and they just worked really, really hard. My mother's mother died when she was young, and my mum's dad died when she was young as well. So when she met my dad, it was, a bit of old school romance, and they've been together for over 40 years, and they're still very much in love. So beautiful.
This clear expression of love and support from Mirella's parents gave him the foundation to be confident and bold in a time where migrant families were still discriminated against.
Great role models as parents, and I think that's really, really important. And not to say that people, obviously things happen in families and so forth, but because I had that steady household and that supportive and unconditional love coming from both my parents, it gave me the confidence to make difficult decisions, which led into my property investing. Like, when you're, 18, 19, 20-year-old boy thinking, oh, yeah, I'm gonna go buy property, a lot of immigrant parents would have said to their kids, don't take risks, bet the banks, or you'll be held to ransom from the banks for years. And obviously they condition their children into not property investing and to not taking risk. And then the reality is that in today's day and age, unless you're prepared to take some risk, you won't get the reward.
The choice of the Mirella family to reside in Melbourne upon migration would also prove to be a major impact on Mirella's beginnings in property investment, as at an early age he fell in love with the buildings and properties of his surrounding suburbs.
So Moonee Ponds in Melbourne, so famous for three things, named the Everidge, the Moonee Valley Racecourse, and Underbelly Series 1. So it was an interesting place to grow up. My family migrated out there since the 1950s from Italy.
Wow, so you've been living in there pretty much, or they've been living there pretty much since they've migrated here, is that correct to say?
Yeah, there or around the corner. So, like, I think my dad's first house was in North Melbourne, which is just next door sort of thing. But, these areas weren't very sought after until recently. So I think the AFL footballer market in Melbourne really put Moonee Ponds and Essendon on the map. Prior to that, it was a bit of a rough and tough area, but that's the whole idea. Like, you look even now, you're looking in Sydney. Like, I remember the whole resurgence of Redfern and how well property went through Redfern, that gentrification, and now obviously with that light rail going into the inner west, that's really going to just really cement property prices, but also the capability of the area and the accessibility of the area. We saw the same thing in Footscray and Seddon down in Melbourne. These were areas sort of, that nobody wanted to live in. Now, obviously, the byproduct of that is you've seen Yarraville, Seddon, all the way out to even Sunshine. Sunshine and St Albans have been very well-performing suburbs in recent years, and obviously there's been a large investment from state and federal government down in Victoria.
Without much financial support from his family, Mirella worked hard to build his own wealth at a very young age.
There wasn't much support. There was zero support from a financial point of view. But there was also not a lot of support. My dad's old school, So, for him, it was just live on the smell of an oily rag, save. Back then, they used to save like 50%. But they were buying assets like 100 grand, but saving 50, and then buying the properties and only borrowing 50% from the banks. So, I just thought it was normal for your dad to own lots of properties. You know, like I just thought my mum and dad owned property, service stations, houses, and I just thought it was normal. So when I met kids that they just owned one house, I was like, what do you mean you just own one house? Like, don't you have to spend every second weekend like cleaning one of the investment properties? And he's like, they're like, no, that's not normal. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, what did my parents give me? They gave me an education in probably self-belief rather and great role models and so forth. But probably there was no real, education around what decisions I should make. So that came to me doing my research. And I basically did what I'm doing now, which is just, talking to you, which is talk to lots of people, immerse myself in it. I didn't go to university. I barely finished high school. So for me, it was just to know a lot about a little and a little about a lot. And whenever I got a chance to ask people questions and understand how it all sort of works, that's when I did what I did.
So how does one become such a successful property investor with no prior experience, no university degree, and no financial help? Morello discloses his journey from petrol pumpkin kid to property tycoon.
So I started the business when I was quite young, and then the rest of the time I started the business while I was quite young doing the youth events, and then I got basically into real estate pretty much straight out of high school. So like my dad said to me, are you going to go to uni? Like my brother and sister went to uni, but my brother, I actually did not want to do real estate. What I wanted to be, Tyler, I don't even know if I've told me to do this story. I wanted to be a auctioneer. So I used to watch my brother call auctions, and at the time his boss back then, Lou and Dina, call auctions, and my mate's dad, Brad Teal, call auctions. And I wanted to be an auctioneer, which I still, dabble in today as well. And, the moral of the story is that my brother goes to me, if you want to be an auctioneer, you're going to need to, you're going to need to, like in Melbourne, it's not like Sydney where they have the auctioneer and the agent, and the same in Queensland, the auctioneer and the agent. In Melbourne, the auctioneer is generally the agent. So like a top performing agent will do his own auctions, he or she's own auctions to create profile.
Oh,
so my brother
too. Interesting.
There isn't really an industry for an auctioneer only in Melbourne. They don't really exist, or it's generally the director or representative of the company. So that works there permanently. So often, if I'm in Melbourne, I will call auctions for my brother's. So my brother's in real estate as well. So he's got a company called Jealous Craig in Melbourne. JELLIS Craig, CRAIG, So often, let's say one of my brother's staff books an auction, I or my brother will call it if they're not auctioneers. But I wanted to be an auctioneer, so my brother sort of put it back on me. I didn't work for my brother because I didn't want to have sort of nepotism, and I went and worked for a guy named Adrian Butera, who was one of the best auctioneers in Australasia at the time. It was in the top four in Australasia. John McGrath was number one. And I went and worked at a company called Compton & Green, and I just did it old school. I've door knocked 10,000 doors. I've been into 3,000 lounge rooms, and I've been involved in 1,000 property transactions now. So it's sort of, I've done like a PhD in property, even though I never went to university. It's effectively like doing a PhD.
From this point, Morello moved onto the show that would garner his fame and escalate his career, The Apprentice.
One of my real estate clients, there you go, so a guy named, client and friend that I used to do business with on the other side of town, his name's Spiro Vassiliadis. I'm just giving him a mention because if he hears this, he'll go, why don't you tell people the story? But Spiro said, you should try out for The Apprentice, and he sent me all the nomination stuff, and I said, mate, I don't have time for this rubbish. I actually said to him, I said, I was busy being $1 million a year writer in real estate, and I thought I was just going to be, that simple boy from Moody Pond for the rest of my life, and but I was very happy, my primary school was 2 km away, my high school that I went to that I was vice captain of, and my brother was school captain of, and my niece is now school captain of my primary school, and I was school captain of my primary school, and so like it was all within, a 2 or 3 km radius of where we lived, and my dad's servos were around the corner, and our offices were around the corner. So I thought I was just going to stay there. But then, 10,000 people tried out for The Apprentice, and I went to the, between Spiro and I, we did the nomination stuff. And then I went to the they have like an audition and day that you have to go to at the Rendezvous Hotel in Flinders Street in Melbourne. And then that from there, I got refined from 10,000 in Australia to sort of top 100 in Australia, then top 100 in Victoria, top 100 in Australia, and then obviously to the top 12 that were on the show.
Murillo recognises the valuable lessons and important contacts that he made while competing in the show.
I enjoyed it because obviously I summited Mount Kinabalu last year in Borneo. So even though I'm a sort of a big guy, I always like a big challenge. So like I was up against obviously the apprentice, even just trying out for it. I was up against some very intelligent and very formidable and very, you know, wise and streetwise people. So there was plenty of competition in the room, but I didn't see it as competition. I just sort of look, I'll go and have a go and give it my best. And I didn't even expect to win, to be honest, Trip Torren. Like I was in business with my brother at this point. So I was 23, about to turn 24. My brother was like, when I got on, he was the hardest person for me to tell because I was effectively my brother's business partner. And my brother goes, you know, how long are you going to be? And I said, well, worst case scenario is I'm going to film is 10 weeks. You know, so, and no phones, no wallets, no, they take it all off you at the start. But I said, that's worst case scenario. I said, but realistically, John, I'll probably, you know, come whatever, 8th, 6th, 4th, you know, 3rd, 2nd, I didn't think even 2nd. So I'll probably come like, you know, 6th, 5th, or 4th or something. I looked at it and I went, I could probably get it like a 6th or a 5th or something like that. And each week we're allowed to ring our family, or each 2 weeks a week, yeah, I think we can. I rang him week one. He's like, how many left? I go, 11. Maybe week two, how many left? I go, 10. How many left? 8, 7, 9, 17, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. And then I got to the last, and I go, shit, I'm in the last two. And he's like, well, what does that mean? He goes, what happens if you win? I said, nah, I won't win, mate. I said, I'm up against one of the most beautiful internally, externally women I've ever met. And she also was. Yeah, Heather, and she also was a dynamo when it came to business. So I said to her, I'd either marry her or give her a job, and she was married. She was married already, and she had a big job. She was on, big bucks at Sensacella Pages as one of their top performers. So just great girl.
Who will be Australia's first apprentice?
I want you to work for me. You're hired.
The Apprentice Australia
starts Monday 9:30 after The Mentalist on 9.
Yeah. Great girl. Genuinely thought that I was. So I don't know if you know, but they filmed two people winning. They filmed me winning and they filmed her winning because basically they don't want you to go back to Moonee Ponds. And whilst it's on TV for 10 weeks, while I was on TV, I thought I was going to come second. So I just went crazy in my real estate career. And I just went and signed up like 38 properties for sale. And, everybody was like, wait a minute. You're the guy from TV, and I'm like, yeah. And they're like, I'm like, do you want to sell your house? I'm like, yeah, we do. I'm like, okay, let's get it on the market. So I made the most of it because the reality was I thought it was, you know, the concept. My father had said it, not in a pessimistic way, but sort of in a bit of a fatherly advice. He said, make hay while the sun shines.
Yes.
And but I got to be honest with you, Tyrone, the sun's been shining the whole time. It didn't stop shining. So I've. But I understood what my dad was trying to prepare me for. There was people that were on the show, I mentioned names, that and there's actually a syndrome now where because you're nobody, then you're famous, then you're nobody again. This 15 minutes of fame stuff can be quite detrimental from a mental health point of view for some people. But see, I never did it to be famous. I did it because it was just a tool to get me, one, to test myself, and two, a tool to give me an opportunity to experience things and to meet great people, including Mark Lewis. You know, I wanted a chance to work with Mark and learn from Mark, and he's been a great mentor and like a second dad, effectively. So sometimes in good ways, sometimes in bad ways, but he's very good at what he does. Mark, he's very good at what he does, and I'm very, very lucky to be around him.
Coming up after the break, we will delve into Morella's property investing journey on how he started at just 18.
Yeah, I was 18, about to turn 19. I think I might have settled on my when I was 19, but I think I signed the contract when I was 18. So, you know, obviously that's not everybody doesn't have that opportunity because they may not have necessarily had, a business to make the money from.
Also, hear the warnings that Morella has for anyone attempting the property investment game.
You do need to evolve. If you don't evolve, you'll become redundant.
Hey, podcast listeners, if you like these episodes and want to continue helping me spread the word, then head over to iTunes and leave a review for me. I've created a special link that will show you exactly what to do, so it's taken all the guesswork out for you. Simply visit likemypodcast.com. Thanks in advance and much appreciated. Never one to be late to the party, Morello made some bold decisions very early on in life to get his business and his wealth off the ground, where it then skyrocketed.
Yeah, so I started a business when I was 15. It was called Angel Promotion. I won a government grant from the Moonee Valley Council, which was for a program called the Freeze Program. And what it was to run drug and alcohol-free events. And off the back of running those events sort of 15, 16, 17, 18, I ended up selling that business when I was 19, nearly 20. I used those funds to sort of get into my first property opportunity. That was just sort of like a one bedroom down in Moonee Pond. But that's what I tell people. All you got to do is get into the first one and then you can start to leverage off the back of that.
When most 18-year-olds are busy thinking and about partying and university, Morello was busy purchasing his first property.
One thing my dad had taught me was to save and to be, you know, frugal with my money. So obviously, I used to make this money as a, you know, this business. We actually did quite well. It was doing quite well. And then I'd bring the money home. A lot of it was cash money back then from the events that we used to run. And my dad would, you know, literally get it and split it in half as soon as I got it and put half away and say, roof part's going away. So at least I sort of had a deposit there. If you are young, though, what I always recommend to people is there's no time like the present that one starts saving. I help a lot of sort of 18 to 25-year-olds that want to buy their first investment property. And it's a great time to do it because, you know, you can sort of justify still living at home with your mum and dad. Mm. When you obviously you've moved out and you're in your early 30s and you want to buy your principal place of residence, it does get a little bit more challenging, obviously, with the serviceability calculators and so forth now. So, you know, the banks are looking for dual income. So, like, they'll expect, you know, you and your partner to both be working to really, you know, secure that funding. So I just sort of say to people, look, if you're young, take advantage of it. Work a second job. Put your savings away first at the start of the month or the start of the week. Put your tax returns back into your savings. Before you know it, you could have probably a $30,000 deposit probably within 12 to 18 months, $30,000 to $40,000 deposit. That should give you enough to get into your first property.
Property investment is a very rarely an easy journey. More than likely, you'll experience bumps, hiccups, and detours along your travels, as Morello also has. But coming up, we'll hear how he dealt with his mistake and learned a very valuable lesson from it.
I think I've made a couple of tough decisions, more bad decisions, I reckon. So probably something that I inherited from my father as well is his sentiment for things. So, like, my father likes to buy properties that are sentimental, and so do I. So my dad had a property in Racecourse Road, Flemington, and in Melbourne. And, look, it's a great property. I still actually own it. But I paid over the hill for it, and I bought one of the top story apartments overlooking the city. And the funny thing was, I only bought it because I was like, my dad had owned the land. It was an old factory since like 1974, right? So I said it would be a travesty for Morello not to own one of the apartments. So I go to my dad, you should own one of the apartments. He's like, no, I've done what I need to do. He goes, you buy it. Anyway, I bought this apartment. The thing's gone back in value. So it's, just right now, that Melbourne market, well, not now, even this would have been like five years ago even, but it's gone back in value. Like I just signed a contract, not thinking much of it. I let sentiment get in the way of making a pragmatic and logical decision, which is that's the piece of advice I'm trying to give people is don't let your emotion get in the way of making a good decision. If the numbers don't crunch or if it doesn't sit right in your gut, then you're probably it's not right. And this one didn't sit right in my gut from the moment that I bought it. So, yeah, which I've still got it.
On the flip side of the dangers and risks of property investing, we all have those aha moments, those times when everything just clicks and it seems like the world is perfect. Morella shares his golden moment of property investing, which was centered around helping his clients.
I'm a big believer when it comes to property investing that there's always a deal to be done. So I bought a property from a lady in Moonee Ponds, just up the road from where I grew up. And she had the property had been in the family for 93 years. So what I realised that, you know, she had the agents go and speak to her, and everyone was being quite clinical with her. But she has never married. She didn't have any children. And what I realised is that everyone's got a real story, especially behind the property. And if you're actually prepared to listen to the story of the property, there's probably an opportunity for you to find the happy medium for everybody. So she wanted to move into a villa. So I don't know what you call it in Sydney. I think in Melbourne we just call it like a villa unit. Like I went to like a 1960s yellow brick build, but they're like single story. And they're really good if you want to give them a little reno. They're generally like two or three on a block. And you find them very much in the sort of the north and the northwest of Melbourne. And so she wanted to move into one of those, but obviously she didn't want to get rushed out of the house, but she needed the money. So she needed the cash. So I obviously did a deal with her. Well, if I gave her what they call in Melbourne a Section 27 early release of deposit, could I start getting access to the property, you know, a particular part of the property and so forth. But at the same time, she didn't need to rush out and she could take her time to move out. So probably the aha moment that I'm alluding to is that, you know, if you get an opportunity to be proactive and deal directly with an owner, don't go in just with the money in mind and greed, you know. And even if you go into an agent or through a broker of some sort, I think there's always a deal to be done as long as it's fair and reasonable, and you should look to develop out a win-win outcome. And in this case, I did, and it worked back quite well for me.
And that wasn't even the best part.
And the best part was I invited her back. Once we finished the reno, I invited her back to see the home, and she was just gobsmacked. She was like, wow. She's like, my parents would be. So her grandparents owned it, then her parents and her. So like her 93 years, and she came back and she had tears in her eyes. She was taking photos. She's like, my parents would have been so happy to see it like back to its beautiful. Like we polished the floorboards, we fixed everything, re-stumped, rewired, new roof. We did clean out the whole back. We put a garage, such sort of sail in. So just basically things that could add value to the home very quickly. And that way we could look to, you know, get it revalued by the bank and see if we can leverage some more out of it.
A lot of hard work and effort goes into these aha moments that we cherish so much.
Can I tell the honest truth? What we did in 3 weeks, people do, like my mate goes, we should have filmed it, because he goes, no, I worked on renos. And he goes, for you to have pulled this off in 3 weeks, it's like I took a week off work, I like just turned the phone off and just solved solid work. But in 3 weeks in total, what we did, you know, people don't do, you, normally takes me like 3 or 4 months to do. So I have to say, I did call in my favours. I did call in. So I flew a couple of friends in from Sydney and to Melbourne to help with the rewiring. So I got the probably 15, 20 grand worth of rewiring. And I basically all I did was pump for the materials, so which was good. And then the re-stumping, they were able to salvage some of the sort of floorboards. So that way they felt they were going to just rip out all the floorboards and put chipboard down and go carpet over the top. But once we got into it, the guys that I used, and this is where it's good to try and build a bit of an army or a bit of an A team. And the guys that I used had done stuff for us before, and you know they had our best interests in mind. And he said, "Mate, look, I reckon I can salvage all this," and he did. And it looks absolutely stunning today. And they did a beautiful sort of Japanese varnish finish over the top. So like with the Baltic pine, you know, 100-year-old boards, and we're some of the sort of areas of the house where they weren't as noticeable. We did lay some carpet and so forth. We took some of the better floorboards there and moved them to the areas where they were exposed.
So when the numbers are crunched, how much return is made from those staggering endeavours?
We've probably spent some purchasing, especially early 600s, probably spent 120 on it. And I reckon the thing's probably got to be worth, if you went to market, so this is the challenge, the bank valuations, and you would know this because you are, but the bank valuations are coming in conservative. I reckon if you put it up for auction today, it'd be worth a million. So I would have picked up a, you know, probably 400 grand equity in probably, you know, 2.5 to 3 year period, which is good money. And probably more, you'd probably get 1 to 1.1 at auction. And the bank value right now, I haven't done one recently on it, but I reckon it'd come in at something with a 9 in front of it. So 9, probably late 9s.
Oh, that's really good. I mean, for basically 3 weeks worth of work, I think you've done it. A fantastic job.
And it's been rented the whole time, so it's getting me six oh five a week rent. So it was on $595, and we just bumped it up to $605.
In this modern age of expensive living and insane housing costs, what does a portfolio of 9 properties actually look like?
I think we worked it out for one of the articles. So I think it was about $6.5 million, I think. So $6.5 million all up for everything. And I'm leveraged at about 70 to 80% on that.
With that kind of wealth, what is next for Morella's portfolio? To leverage or use the equity to build it even further?
I am definitely. Where my challenge is, Tyrone, is the serviceability calculators now. So I'll have to start getting smarter and looking and be prepared to, you know, sort of remove your ego, swallow your pride, and do some deals with people. So, which I don't really mind. So, like, you know, as I said, I've got a business partner that's very open and conducive to us doing things together. And he has a very pragmatic and black and white, you know, sort of clinical mindset when it comes to doing things like this. So I think that's just the reality of the market that we're playing in. It's a little bit like when I was selling real estate when I was younger, and I remember we didn't have Chinese investment, and then what happened was the GFC happened, and they let anyone that had a pulse and money buy in Australia, which was, you know, propped up the market. But it was a different ball game, you know what I mean? Like, property selling and acquiring was a different ball game. So you just got to play to the parameters that we got right now. And the parameters that we got right now is that we have a very well governed. And when I say well, I say it with a little tongue in cheek, like well governed is like there's probably a little bit too much regulation. And I can play devil's advocate and I can see, you know, I have the maturity now to understand why they're doing it. And it's that canary in the coal mine sort of concept where they're not really looking for the non-married, no children, 30-year-old professional. They're basically saying, look, if you go out to Western Melbourne or Western Sydney, there's families with a combined family income of maybe 60 or 70,000 a year, and they just bought their third or fourth property. And the numbers are stacking right now, but they're just always a bit cautious that, you know, if the market did turn or had a correction or the price of money went up, that could these people sustain it? So I understand why they're doing it and where it's coming from. But at the same time, it can be frustrating as a property investor, and it can be frustrating when you're trying to encourage people to, you know, step outside their comfort zone. So I think coming are the days of a little bit of creativity and sort of getting onto the better way of doing things, or the different way of doing things. They're not better or worse. It's just you play the cards that you're given. That's the biggest mistake people make, is that they try and they think, you know, what worked 3 or 4 or 5 or 20 years ago is going to work today, and that's definitely not the case.
So inspired by this story and what Andrew Morella is excited about today, we'll keep the conversation going in a future episode on Property Investory, where we talk about how to apply Morella's strategy and how talking far and wide with other investors can yield surprising results.
I'm always looking for opportunities where there's a chance to actually leverage off and use my connections to increase some value in some way, shape or form.
As well as what resources he recommends for you listeners.
First of all, do go on the ybr.com.au website or even just Google Morella Matrix and it'll come up.
And that's next time on Property Investory. To get the full transcript and see the show notes, visit our website at propertyinvestory.com. Thanks for listening.